Well, hello everyone. It's good to see all of you. Yes, we are recent transplants, and I'd just like to thank everyone for the warm welcome and greetings that that you've all warmly received us with. We are very friendly church area, and we felt just instantly welcome from day one that we got here. So I want to thank you all for the warm welcome that we received. Well, brethren, as we know, it's a fact of life that we're going to go through hard times in this life. And if you haven't faced any hard times yet, it's just because you haven't been on this earth long enough to go through it. We are going to face hard times. We're going to face financial troubles. We're going to have health problems. We're going to have loss of loved ones, damaged relationships. I mean, these things happen. They're just a part of living. There's a lot of good that comes in this life. There's a lot of joy. There's a lot of good things that happen. But inevitably, there will be some bad things that come along that we have to deal with. And many times, we are forever changed by some of the events that happen to us in our lives. And it's how we face those hard times. It's how we deal with those things. It's how we grow from that. That will shape us. And many times, God uses these trials to teach us lessons. Well, there was one man in the Bible, we all know who he is, who faced a tremendous trial. And that man was Job. Now, the story of Job is really an incredible story. I think all of us would have to say, no matter what we've been through in our lives, none of us have ever suffered the way that Job did. Can you imagine losing everything that was dear to you in just a matter of a few hours? Your family, your business, your livelihood, the respected position that you had in the community, all of your possessions, everything gone. In just one day, in fact, in just a few hours. Yet Job's initial reaction, I think, is one that few of us could ever summon. Think back, if you would, to some event that you've gone through in your life, and perhaps you're going through something right now, some event that is really trying you, that is a great hardship that you're going through. But if you're not currently going through something, think back in a time in your life when you did, and how you faced those things. I don't think any of us, no matter how bad it was, can compare to what Job has gone through at this time. So by the end of this sermon, I hope to have presented to you some interesting facts, some interesting concepts that you may not have considered before now concerning our own trials and our own hardships. And I'd like to answer the question as best as I can, what was Job supposed to learn from this trial? Likewise, what were we supposed to learn from Job's trial? And by extension, from our own trials, from our own hardships. So I'd like to go through the book of Job today with you as quickly as possible. Now, at first glance, and I don't know about you, I always, in the past, I've read the book of Job, and it just seemed to me a bunch of guys, intellectual guys, doing some bantering, you know, trying to outwit each other, outplay each other. But when you really get into it, and you follow the book of Job, and you follow Job in his journey, it is quite an amazing journey that he goes through, because you see his grief, you see his pain, you see his suffering, you see the betrayal of his friends. He goes through anger, he goes through justification, and he finally comes to a complete submission to God in the end. And I think that Job's journey through this trial is a great lesson for those of us in the church as we go through our own trials. And Job's perspective is one similar, I think, to most of us in the church. Because, as we will see, Job was truly a righteous man. It wasn't something that just said about him. This came from God's own mouth. And because of that, Job could not understand why God would allow these things to happen to him. And I think, likewise, as Christians, we can fall into that same trap. Because we also follow God to the best of our abilities. We try to lead decent lives. We stay faithful. Not perfectly, of course. We sin and we do make mistakes. But we do follow God to the best of our abilities. That's what we've committed our lives to. And then when tragedy strikes, we can feel betrayed. We can feel abandoned. We might even think, God, why is it that I've given my life to you, but you've forsaken me? But is that what's really going on? Are we really being forsaken? And is that how we should look at it? Well, that's how Job looked at it at first. But God was showing him something. And it was a lesson for him, and it's a lesson for us. The title of this message, if you like titles, is God Fair, An Emotional Journey with Job? Is God Fair, An Emotional Journey with Job? And I think we'll see as we go through this that Job struggled with many of the same things that we all struggle with, the questions that we have in this life. So without further ado, let's jump right into it. Let's turn to Job chapter 1, and we're going to spend the entire time for the remainder of this message in this book. But Job chapter 1, I know we're all familiar with the story, but just to set the stage, let's read the first three verses. And it says, "A man in the land of Uz was named Job. That man was honest, a person of absolute integrity. He feared God and avoided evil. He had 7 sons and 3 daughters, and owned 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 pairs of oxen, 500 female donkeys, and a vast number of servants, so that he was greater than all the people of the East." So this Job was truly a great man. He was wealthy beyond compare to anyone around him. So skipping down to verse 6, says, "One day the divine beings came to present themselves before the Lord, and the adversary also came among them. The Lord said to the adversary, 'Where did you come from?' The adversary answered the Lord, 'From wandering throughout the earth.' The Lord said to the adversary, 'Have you thought about my servant Job? Surely there is no one like him on earth, a man who is honest, a man who is of absolute integrity, who reveres God and avoids evil.' The adversary answered the Lord, 'Does Job revere God for nothing? Haven't you fenced him in, his house and all he has, and blessed the work of his hands so that his possessions extend throughout the earth?' He said, 'But stretch out your hand and strike all that he has, and he will certainly curse you to your face.'" So we see this dialogue taking place between God and Satan. And if you'll notice, God is actually the one that brings up Job and actually calls him his servant, which is quite an honor. If you can be called the servant of God and get such a description from God himself about your character, that's quite an honor. Well, Satan doesn't believe it, and so he issues a challenge to God, and God accepts. So we might be tempted to look at this and say, well, you know, that's not fair. You know, here's Job just minding his own business. He's doing his thing. He's serving God. He's serving the people. And here he becomes the subject of a bet, so to speak, between God and Satan. Now, we're going to get to more of that concept later. But notice that God has high praise for Job. He says, "There's none like him in all the earth." The King James Version says, "Perfect, upright, fears God, and shuns evil." I mean, in all the earth, he was the most righteous man on the face of the earth, according to God himself. So Job wasn't just a good man. You know, he wasn't just a decent guy. He was a great man. He was the kind of man that commanded respect, that people admired, that people went to for help. He was the kind, if he lived today, he would get awards. People would write books about him. People would sing his praises. He was revered and admired by all. He was truly an incredible human being. So when it comes to Job and a scorecard of righteousness, he'd blow us all out of the water. He wasn't perfect, of course, but he was as close to it as a human being could be. Now let's jump over to chapter 29 of Job. We'll read what Job described of himself, and we have no reason to suspect that it wasn't true because of God's own description about Job. But Job chapter 29, we'll read verse 11 through 17. And it says this, "Indeed, the ear that heard blessed me, the eye that looked commended me, because I rescued the weak who cried out, the orphans who lacked help. The blessing of the perishing reached me. I made the widow's heart sing. I put on justice and it clothed me, righteousness as my coat and turban. I was eyes to the blind, feet to the lame. I was a father to the needy. The case I didn't know, I examined. I shattered the fangs of the wicked. I rescued prey from their teeth." See, Job was the real deal. He went above and beyond what most people do. Not only did he keep himself from sin, not only was he just a good man, stayed loyal to his family, came home every night after work, but he was much more than that. He championed the cause of the widow and the fatherless and the poor and the needy and the defenseless. I mean, he was truly a champion for those who needed to be championed. So now let's go back to Job chapter 1, continuing on with the story. We're going to just briefly look at verse 13 through 19. I'm just kind of summarize it a little bit. here because we're very familiar with the story, but this is what actually happened to Job. You know, the Job's sons and daughters were eating and drinking and having their parties, and a messenger comes to Job, and one after another, these messengers keep coming to him, telling him of all the horrible things that has happened to him. He's lost his oxen, he's lost his servants, he's lost his cattle and his camels, and one thing after another, and finally a tornado of some sort comes and kills his whole family. And just imagine, if you would, put yourself in that position and imagine how you would feel under this kind of circumstance. But I think Job's reaction here was absolutely incredible. Verse 20 says, Job arose, tore his clothes, shaved his head, fell to the ground and worshipped. And he said, naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I will return there. The Lord has given, the Lord has taken. Bless the Lord's name. In all this, Job didn't sin or blame God. So Job's first reaction is absolutely incredible. How many of us would ever have, could possibly summon that kind of righteous reaction? I know I probably wouldn't have. But his reaction is exactly what it should have been. He didn't blame God. He didn't get angry. He didn't say, why me? But as we will read, this initial reaction didn't last too long. Jump over to chapter 2, verses 1 through 10. Now we'll see here, this is again, Satan came to present himself before the Lord. Verse 3, the Lord said to the adversary, have you thought about my servant Job? For there was none like him on the earth. He's reiterating what he's already said. A man who is honest, who is of absolute integrity, who reveres God and avoids evil. And this is very important. He says, he still holds on to his integrity, even though you incited me to ruin him for no reason. See, he didn't deserve this, brethren. He didn't deserve what happened to him. He had done nothing to earn this kind of tragedy and trauma that came upon him. God just said it. He said, you moved to incite me against him for no reason. He didn't deserve it. He didn't earn it. The adversary responded to the Lord, skin for skin, people will give up everything they have in exchange for their lives. But stretch out your hand and strike his bones and his flesh, then he will definitely curse you to your face. And the Lord answered the adversary, there he is within your power, only preserve his life. And so in verse 7, we see that the adversary struck Job with severe sores from the sole of his foot to the top of his head. Job took a piece of broken pottery to scratch himself and sat down on a mound of ashes. And Job's wife said to him, are you still clinging to your integrity? Curse God and die. And Job said to her, you're talking like a foolish woman. Will we receive good from God but not also receive bad? And in all this, Job didn't sin with his lips. So now we can see that his trial has intensified. It's gone beyond just you losing physical possessions, just losing family. Now it's gone where his entire physical health has been affected. Boils so bad that he had to take a piece of pottery and scrape to get any kind of relief. Pain so intense that the only place he could find relief was sitting in ashes. He had truly reached the bottom. Even his own wife couldn't see why he would want to live any longer, and she encouraged him to just give up, to just curse God and die. But again, he responds incredibly well. Shall we not receive good from God and not receive evil as well? So despite all that has happened to him, he still has an incredible attitude. He still holds on to his integrity. Well, then in chapter 3, the weight of all this tragedy begins to take its toll, and Job finally breaks. So let's turn to chapter 3 and read a few verses from verse 2. So Job said, perish the day I was born, the night someone said a boy has been conceived. That day let it be darkness. May God above ignore it and light not shine on it. May deepest darkness claim it and a cloud linger over it. May all that darkens the day terrify it. So now Job begins to lament his state. His resolve is broken. He falls into a state of despair, which is very natural. I mean, can we blame him? He was human, after all. At this point, he's hit rock bottom. He's lost everything. He's lost his children. He's lost his health. He's lost his wealth. He's lost all the respect that he once commanded, his position in the community. It's all gone. Everything gone. And we need to ask ourselves, what would our reaction be? How could we condemn Job for his reaction? He's lost everything. Now, if Job had just stopped at this point, with feeling sorry for himself. He wouldn't have gotten into so much trouble. But he doesn't, and he begins to blame God for what is going on with him. So jump over to Job chapter 9. We're going to read verse 14 and 17 through 19. Beginning in verse 14, Job 9, verse 14. He says, "Yet I myself will answer him. I'll choose my words in a contest with him." So now Job is feeling angry. He's feeling justified, so much so he's willing to challenge God. Verse 17, "Who bruises me with a tempest and multiplies my wounds for no reason. He doesn't let me catch my breath, for he fills me with bitterness. If the issue is strength, behold power. If justice, who calls God to meet me?" He says, "God, you're punishing me without cause here. I don't deserve this." He said, "You don't even let me catch my breath." It's one thing after another. He's accusing God of being cruel and unjust. I mean, Job is really angry at this point. He's just letting it all out. I'd just like to ask, have you ever been at that stage? Have you ever been at a point where you're just angry, that you've taken what you feel, "I've taken all I can take"? Have you ever said to God, "Well, this just isn't fair. What I'm going through is just not fair. I don't deserve this"? And I think we've all, to some degree or another, done this at some point in our lives, especially, I think, when we've led fairly decent lives. You know, in the church, we tend to do that. We tend to keep our nose pretty clean, so to speak. We don't engage in many of the activities that the people of the world do. And it's easy to go down this road. It's easy to look at it and say, "I don't deserve this. You know, look at all the good that I've done. Not only have I followed your way of life, I've served your people, I serve in church, I've gone above and beyond what most people would ever do. This just isn't fair." Now, the problem with that thought process is that when we think that something isn't fair, we're actually saying that God isn't fair. And is that something that we can say? Is that something that we can truly think? We're going to get to more of that later. Verse 20 and verse 20 through 22, Job continues. He says, "If I'm innocent, my mouth condemns me. I have integrity, but God declares me perverse." Which wasn't quite true, because God declared him righteous. But this is his mindset. He says, "I'm blameless, yet don't know myself. I reject my life." He says, "It's all the same. Therefore, I say God destroys the blameless with the sinners." So now he's saying, you know, there's no difference. You make no difference in the wicked and the sinners and the righteous. And isn't this the eternal question that haunts us all from time to time? Why does God allow bad things to happen to good people? I think that's the question we'll wrestle with as long as we're on this earth. Well, Job was struggling with this question as well. Again, saying, "God, you're not fair. You don't make a distinction between the righteous and the wicked." And in fact, if we had time to read it all other places, he says, it seems that some ways you favor the wicked over the righteous. Why do the wicked prosper and the righteous fail, he's asking. And on the surface, it may appear that way sometimes. Now, it's not my intention today to address all these questions. You know, why do the wicked prosper and why do bad things happen to good people? I can't answer them point by point. But my purpose today is to show that Job struggled with some of the same questions that we have, the same issues that we look at from time to time and say, why do these things happen? But there's one conclusion that we can draw that answers all of these questions. And it's the same conclusion that Job eventually comes to in the end. But for now, we're still following Job's emotional journey. All of these bad things have happened to him. And at first, he responds amazingly well. You know, but then he just begins to spiral. All these questions that he's had about the world, that we have as well, just begin to flood out of him. He's angry. He's hurt. He's just letting go. He's removed the filters, and he's just letting it fly. Have you ever been to that point? Have you ever faced something in your life where you just want to just release and just let it all go and let God and just tell God everything that you've ever wanted to say, where it's all too much? You're just at the end of your rope, not where you want to forsake God, not to that point, but just to release that anger, to release that pent-up frustration. Well, that's where Job was. He didn't forsake God. He didn't want to forsake God. He just wanted to put it all out there because of the trial he was in, because of the state of mind that he had come to. Job couldn't see the goodness of God. He couldn't see a loving God, a just God. All he could see was the perceived injustices in his life and in the world. That's the state of mind that he had come to at this point. Let's jump back over to Job 13 and read verse 24, 23 and 24. Job 13, 23 and 24. He says, "How many are my offenses and sins? Inform me about my rebellions and sins." He says, "What are they? Tell me what they are. I don't know what they are. I don't know what I've done to deserve this. Why hide your face from me and consider me your enemy?" Job had reached a point where he thought that God hated him, that God was actually treating him like an enemy. Have you ever been in that position where things are going so badly for you, one thing after another, that it feels like God has it out for you? And you know intellectually he doesn't, but that's the way it feels. Job had reached that point. Not only did he not see a loving God, he thought it was the opposite. He thought this was a God that wanted to crush him, which caused him even more perplexity, because he's like, am I so bad that God hates me? I mean, what have I done to deserve this kind of result? See, brethren, the problem is that we tend to lower God to our level or elevate ourselves to his, depending on your perspective. And that's especially true if we've led a pretty good life, you know, or at least left the old life behind and made a complete 180 and become a different person. I'm not that person anymore. I've forsaken those ways. I've followed you. And this is where Job was. Job had allowed his righteousness to elevate himself in his mind to the same level as God, which we know is quite opposite from the attitude that we need to have. If you look at what David said, a broken spirit, a broken and contrite heart. I mean, that's what you will not despise. And we know that's where we need to be, and that's what we should strive to be. But Job was entrenched in this mindset. Let's jump to chapter 27. We're going to read verses 5 through 6. As Job goes further along, he becomes more and more convinced of his own righteousness and that he did not deserve the position that he was in and the things that had happened to him. But Job chapter 27 speaks to this. Verses 5 through 6. Now, this is a response that he has to all his friends who are coming at him with accusation after accusation, saying, well, Job, you can't be as righteous as you claim because God doesn't operate that way. God only, if you sin, you receive actions accordingly. But Job says in verse 5, he says, I will not agree that you are right. Until my dying day, I won't give up my integrity. I will insist on my innocence, never surrendering it. My conscience will never blame me for what I've done. So Job is becoming more and more staunch. And the truth of the matter is, brethren, that he was right. He didn't deserve it. He didn't deserve any of these things that had come upon him. He had done nothing worthy of this kind of things that happened to him. Let's go to Job 31, because this is a list of things that Job, as he continues in this, he says, if I had done these things, I could understand. If I had been this way, I could understand why God would have brought these things upon me. He said, but I've done none of these things. Very quickly through Job 31, verse 1, he said, I've made a covenant with my eyes. How could I look at a virgin? He says, I don't lust after other women. That's not who I am. That's not what I do. Verse 5, if I have walked with frauds or my feet have hurried to deceit, he says, I don't defraud people. I'm honest as the day is long. I don't do that. That's not who I am. Verse 7, if my step has turned from the way, if my heart has followed my eyes, or a blemish has clung to my hands, I follow God my whole life to the best of my ability. I don't follow the wicked. I don't do those things. Verse 9, if my heart has been drawn to a woman and I have lurked at my neighbor's door, he says, that's not what I do. I don't dabble in those waters. I stay where I need to be. I keep my eyes where they need to be focused. Verse 13, if I rejected the just cause of my male or female servant when they contended with me. He says, I've always tried to be fair. If someone brings up something to me, one of my employees, and they bring up something to me, I've tried to make it right. If I've done them wrong, I make them right. Make it right. He says, if I've denied what the poor wanted or made a widow's eyes tired. He says, I've been very generous with what I've been given. God, you've given me a lot, but I've given it right back. I've never denied the widow. I've never denied the fatherless. I have taken care of people. Verse 24, if I've made gold my trust, said to fine gold my security. He says, I have a proper look at the wealth that I have. I use it for good. It's not what I trust in. I trust in God and always have. Verse 29, if I have rejoiced over my foe's ruin or was excited when evil found them. He says, I don't do that. I don't rejoice over the misfortune of others, even when they've done me wrong. He says, that's not who I am. Verse 33, if I have hidden my transgressions like Adam, concealing my offenses inside me. He says, if I've ever done anything wrong, I apologize for it. I'm an open book. Everyone knows what I've done, and I don't try to conceal it. And then last one, if my land has cried out against me, its rows wept together. He says, I've not abused the land. I've not abused my business. I've not abused what God has given me to squeak out every bit of profit that I can. He said, I've had a healthy respect and a healthy admiration for all that God has done for me. So he's basically saying, if I had done these things, if I had been this kind of person, I could understand. I could really understand, but I've not been this way. So then in chapter 32, we see that Elihu gets involved. And Elihu, he's just mad at the whole scene. He's mad at Job's three friends. He's mad at Job. He just can't believe what he's hearing. And he makes some very good points, but I'd like to focus on just a couple of them. Let's turn to chapter 33. We're going to read verse 8 through 12. Now, this is Elihu, and he's starting to quote some of the things that Job has said throughout this process. And in verse 8, he says, you certainly said in my hearing, quoting of Job, I heard the sound of your words, quote, I'm pure without sin. I'm innocent without offense. Notice that he invents arguments against me. He considers me his enemy, ties up my feet, watches all my paths. And then Elihu says something very interesting. He says, now you're wrong about this, and I'll answer you. For God is greater than anybody. And I think the King James Version says, God is greater than man. And it's a very profound statement. Because, brethren, we make a big mistake when we put ourselves on the same level as God. And this is where Job went wrong. He allowed his righteousness to elevate himself to the same level as God. I could ask the question, have we ever been guilty of the same thing? Have I ever been guilty of the same thing? And I submit to you that any time the words, this isn't fair, have exited your mouth or been in your thoughts, you're guilty of the same thing that Job did. Because, brethren, if we truly believe that the Almighty God is ultimately in control of every aspect of our lives, if we completely and unequivocally surrender our lives to Him, then we know that God is in complete control of every aspect of our lives. And if something happens, it's because He allows it. If something happens, He knows about it. So if our reaction is, God, how can you allow this thing to happen to me? Then that's just not the right frame of mind. It's not where we should be thinking. Instead, we should be thinking, God, my life is yours. Help me through this. Help me get through this situation. Show me what I need to learn. Well, as we start to wrap this up, let's look at Job chapter 38. Because now God comes into the picture, and he has had enough. He's heard all the arguing, and he is beginning to set Job in his place. We're going to read verse 1 through 11. Job 38, verse 1. Then the Lord answered Job from the whirlwind, who is this darkening counsel with words lacking knowledge? Prepare yourself like a man. I will interrogate you, and you will respond to me. Where were you when I laid the earth's foundations? Tell me if you know. Who set its measurements? Surely you know. Who stretched a measuring tape on it? On what were its footings sunk? Who laid its cornerstone while the morning stars sang in unison, and all the divine beings shouted? Who enclosed the sea behind doors when it burst forth from the womb? When I made the cloud its garment, and the dense clouds its wrap? When I imposed my limit for it, put on a bar and doors, and said, you may come this far and no farther. Here your proud waves stop. See, God is starting to show Job just how small and how insignificant he is. He begins to show Job, not only does he not compare to the Almighty, he doesn't even know the questions to ask, let alone answer. You know, what's involved in setting the limits of the waves and laying the foundations of the earth? Job had no idea, nor did he even know that that was a question that he needed to answer or even to ask. So in Job chapter 40, as we read on, Job is a loss for words. He wanted to take on God. He wanted to plead his case, but when given the opportunity, he knows he's outmatched. And so Job says, yes, I spoke once, twice, but I'm just going to shut up now. He says, I have nothing else to say. But God's not done with him. So he goes for round two in the next few chapters. He continues to lay out question after question that Job has no answer to. And then chapter 42, verse 1 through 5, Job finally speaks. And he says, I know you can do anything. No plan of yours can be opposed successfully. You said, who is this darkening counsel without knowledge? I have indeed spoken about things I didn't understand, wonders beyond my comprehension. You said, listen, and I will speak. I will question you, and you will inform me. My ears had heard about you, but now my eyes have seen you. Therefore, I relent and find comfort on dust and ashes. See, Job says, I've heard of you. I thought I knew you. But now I see you. Now I really see you in a way that I've never seen you before. And brethren, sometimes things happen to us. Sometimes things bring us to a place where we need to be, to have a better understanding, to have a better relationship with our God. How can we have a good relationship with God if we don't know him, if we can't relate to him, if we can't understand him? Sometimes we get in a rut and we think we know God. We think we have it all figured out. We've got our life mapped out and we know exactly the way things should go. But sometimes things happen to shake us to our very core that forces us to turn to God and say, I just realized something. I don't know anything. I don't know anything like I thought I did. Have you ever reached that point? Have you ever reached the point where you had nothing left? That you completely and wholly surrender God and say, I'm done. I've got nothing left. I fought through this. I'm mentally, emotionally drained. God, I just give it over to you because I've got nothing left. Well, this is where Job finds himself. And he says, I abhor myself. I repent in dust and ashes. He came to the realization that he was not all that he thought that he was. He came to see himself as he really was, so far inferior to the Almighty that he dare not question him. So, brethren, this was the true lesson that Job needed to learn. This was next level understanding. This was, you can be good, you can be great, you can live your whole life in service to God. You can give of yourself completely, your entire life. Follow his ways as perfectly as a human being can, and still hold no candle to our Creator. That he is above reproach, that he is above correction, that he is above question. And that he has things for us to learn that we don't even know is absent from our understanding. Even Job, who was a great man, who did everything he was supposed to do, could not question the Almighty. Which is a lesson for all of us. Do we recognize that we desperately need God in our lives? Or do we think, maybe even subconsciously, you know, I've got this. I'm in control. I understand the way my life needs to go. Sometimes these trials in our life happen so that we recognize our need for God. Otherwise, we tend to cruise along, thinking that we're the masters of our own destiny and that we don't need God. Sometimes he may just test us, just as he did with Job. God chose Job, and God has chosen us. And as we go through this life, part of being among the chosen being does involve being tested. God will test us from time to time. He will ask, do you love me? Do you love my way of life more than this world? Because ultimately God's goal, is it not for us to be in his kingdom? And as a loving heavenly father, will he not do whatever it takes to ensure that we're going to be there? If God wants to look down on any of us at any time and say, it's time to test. It's time to test Dan. It's time to see where he stands with me. Will he stay faithful and true to me when times get tough? It's time to see where he's at. If that's God's will, who am I to say that's not fair? What have I done to deserve this? That's the time for humility. That's a time for a broken spirit, a broken and contrite heart. That's not a time for arrogance. That's not a time to challenge God or to elevate ourselves to where we think we're on his level. If he allows things to happen, we have to know there is a reason for it. We have to have the humility to accept whatever comes, whether we understand the reason or not. And if we completely turn our lives over to God, if we completely surrender, when we know beyond a shadow of a doubt that God is in charge, then we can never say, that's not fair. We may not understand the reason. We don't have all the answers. I certainly don't. I wish I did. I can't answer questions like, why does a child get cancer? Or why does a murderer shoot down hundreds of innocent people who are just watching a concert? Why do these things happen? Why do the evil have the chance to victimize the innocent? I don't know. These questions are too hard for me, like Job said. questions that I can't answer. But like I said, the sermon is not about addressing these kind of questions in this life, but more to address our attitude and our frame of mind and our submission to God when things go wrong. So at the beginning of the sermon, I said I hope to be able to answer the lesson that Job needed to learn, and by extension, what we are to learn. Job came to the conclusion that God was above question, that he was above reproach, that even as good as he was, as great a man as he was, he had to learn submission to the Almighty. Job allowed his righteousness to elevate his opinion of himself to the point where he felt justified in even challenging God. The truth is, Job didn't deserve what happened to him. He was a righteous man from God's own mouth, but God was testing him. And as our Creator, has the right to do that, and he has the love for us to do that, so that he brings us to where we need to be. When all was said and done, Job learned a huge lesson that better prepared him for the kingdom of God. So, brethren, let's learn from the trials of Job. Let's come to that same conclusion that our God is above reproach, that he's above question. At the same time, he's all-knowing. And anything he allows us to go through is ultimately for our good. We may not understand it. We may not have all the answers, and we don't. But his goal is to see us enter the kingdom of heaven. So let's respond with humility, with a broken and contrite heart, yielding to God's will in our lives in every aspect of our lives.